Welcome to eHealth Learning, inspiring professionals worldwide.
So welcome everybody, and welcome to Emma Bragdon, who's talking to us from Windsor in Vermont, I think it is, over in the US of A. Now, so Emma's going to be running a three-part course for us on spiritually transformative experiences, harvesting their full positive potential in yourself and your clients. I'm really looking forward to this course. We had Emma do a wonderful interview the other day. If you haven't seen that, you can find that on our website as well. So Emma is holds a PhD in transpersonal psychology and has focused on helping others in situations related to spiritually transformative experiences. And that's what she's going to be talking about in this course. And she's been doing that for over 35 years. She's written two of the first books on this subject in 1987 and 1990, and has been a pioneer in developing the field. And she also runs, or is executive director of, Integrative Mental Health for You. And if you want to have a look at that, it's imhu.org, which has a lot of different courses, about 35 courses, for helping people in various ways as alternatives to psychiatric medications. So over to you, Emma. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you.
And thank you so much for the invitation, John. I appreciate it. And I was sharing with John on Friday that I have a lot of English blood in me, so I'm delighted that I get to go to England about once a year when we don't have the pandemic. So I it was suggested by John that we start right on time. And so I'm going to share my screen and pardon the housekeeping for a minute. And then we'll get on to some slides.
And just to say, if you want to ask any questions, please do so in the chat box. And Emma will probably get to those towards the end of her presentation today. And of course, this is recorded, and you can always watch the recording later if you want to too. Thank you.
Okay, so this is a big long title. John just spoke it out, so I'm not going to, but go right into the agenda for the day. So I'll be telling you a little bit more about myself, and then get into some definitions of spirituality. And STE is spiritually transformative experiences. SE is spiritual emergence, and SEY is spiritual emergency. That will be repeated, so you don't have to memorize it now. But I'm going to reflect a little bit on the spiritual emergency that may be going on for all of us right now during the pandemic. But staying on topic, looking more into what each of these designations feels like and looks like. So if you have a client who's in one, that you would be more able to recognize it. And then what the positive outcome would be and what the positive outcome depends on, and what you can do to support spiritual emergence, including some resources. And then we talked about having 10 minutes at the end for Q&A. So in 1985, which seems like the dark ages now, so long ago, I hosted two invited conferences at Esalen, which were all about defining what spiritual emergency is all about. So we invited psychiatrists and spiritual leaders. There was a psychic there. There were several students there. There were people who had experienced it. So we all came together to define what is this thing called spiritual emergency and how can we help people who are going through that particular kind of crisis. So that the results of those two conferences that I did turned out to be the bulk of my dissertation. And then I was invited to publish books on spiritual emergency, which I did, which John just spoke about. And then skipping 11 years, I have been teaching a lot. So I started teaching really in 1990. But in 2001, I was invited to teach in Brazil, and that led into a profound focus on Brazilian spiritism. So I'll be talking about that within this course more, but just to let you know that I've been very involved since 2001 and published 3 more books about Spiritism and also produced 2 other films. And because I wanted to bridge to the wisdom that I found in Brazil, I created a not-for-profit organization called the Foundation for Energy Therapies in 2008. And annually I take a group of healthcare providers to Brazil to learn more about Spiritist therapies with my Brazilian colleagues. So as John mentioned, since 2013, I've been the founder and also executive director of IMHU.org, Integrative Mental Health for You. So just so you have a sense of the books, the ones on the upper left corner, A Source Book for Helping People with Spiritual Problems, it was actually first published as a source book for helping people in spiritual emergency. And then the second book is The Call of Spiritual Emergency. And I'm going to skip over some of these other books on the bottom left. And then just to make note, Kardec Spiritism is an Introduction to Spiritism, mainly in Brazil. And then on the upper right corner is a film which is titled Spiritism, Bridging Spirituality and Health. And that's a 30-minute documentary. Most of it was taken in Brazil, but also we introduced the work of people in the United States as well. And then Spiritism and Mental Health is really more of an academic text, and I'm the editor of it because I brought together psychiatrists, psychologists, researchers, practitioners from Brazil, the UK, and USA to talk about Spiritism and the uniqueness of it, as well as the effectiveness of it. Okay, onwards. So to start with, let's just recognize that mainstream psychiatry, for the most part, has fallen off its pedestal. So back in the 60s and 70s, we were thinking, okay, look at this. We've got medication that really helps people with symptoms of depression and anxiety and all kinds of other mental disorders, including psychosis. But it has not fulfilled its promise. And in fact, people are now complaining about the side effects and recognizing that if you use these medications over a long period of time, they can really be harmful. So that doesn't mean I'm anti-psychiatry or anti-meds, but only that we need to take a very cautious approach to these very, very powerful healing elements or elements that are supposed to lead to our health. So here comes a little bit of a definition. I found this just the other day, and I like the approach. So just to think about spirituality, for many of us, it does not come from religion. It really comes from our own inner depths, our soul. So we must stop confusing religion and spirituality. So religion really was created by human beings and generally covers a set of rules, regulations, and rituals, which are supposed to help people grow spiritually. But it's not the same as spirituality itself. And unfortunately, spirituality does spring from our soul, and it connects us in a very personal way in high communion to whatever we feel is the most high. But because of human imperfections, religion has in many senses become corrupt and very political and divisive. So let's recognize that spirituality is something that comes from our depths and from the soul and leads us into deeper communion with what we can call the most high or the divine. So to define STE, spiritually transformative experience, a spiritually transformative experience takes us beyond our ego and beyond the limitations of our 5 senses. So many people will talk about a 6th sense or moving into a high state of intuition that points in the direction we're going. So one thing to recognize that it is transcultural. In other words, people from all over the world will experience it, no matter what culture they belong to. And thus it is a universe, it's potentially a universal experience. And yet in the ways that we classify mental issues or emotional issues that can come to people that can create a disturbance, we don't recognize spiritually transformative experiences at all. Now, certainly they aren't indicative of a pathology, but people do sometimes look for support because they have a profound experience and they're disturbed by it and they need support in order to integrate it. So some examples of the STE would be a near-death experience, in which someone is clinically dead for a period of time, and they might go out of their, they might say they went out of their body, and they actually experience something that we might call heaven or the spiritual realms, and then they come back, and then they try to integrate what to them may have been even more real than their ordinary life. Some people get very deeply depressed because they have to come back because they experience so much love on the other side. Another example would be mystical experiences or a state of oneness or profound communion with the divine or angels or spirits. Another example, psychic experiences, perhaps an experience of going to a place for the first time in this biological life and yet feeling like you've been there before. We can generally that comes from our intuition or our deep knowingness. Then there are another example would be energetic or kundalini experiences, a rising of energy in a way that disrupts and catalyzes a purification within us and leads, if it's a kundalini experience, it leads to a higher state of consciousness. Sometimes we confuse energetic experiences or bioenergetic experiences and kundalini experiences. We'll be talking about that a little bit more later. More and more people are experiencing shamanic type experiences where they feel a very deep sense of oneness with nature. And oftentimes, in these days, at least in the subcultures that I'm familiar with, people are having more experiences of that type through ayahuasca and some plant medicines. But another example of an STE would be inspired creativity. So moving into a state of consciousness where one seems to be channeling something from someone else and it comes out as poetry or music or visual arts, etc. So to go a little bit more into an example, you may know that Stan and Christina Groff were the people who started the first spiritual emergency network in order to provide support for people who were having spiritually transformative experiences and wondering if they were crazy, but looking for support. And Christina Groff actually was a yoga instructor, and in the birth of her first child, she was having extremely strong energetic experience. And in fact, she really felt like she was losing control and started feeling extremely scared. This was in the middle of birthing her child. And the doctors and nurses became extremely alarmed. And they thought, my God, this woman is psychotic. And they actually took away her child and prevented her from seeing her newborn and convinced her that she needed antipsychotics, or tried to convince her. But because Stan Groff was a psychiatrist, he could intervene. Still, it was an extremely disturbing experience for Christina, and she could recognize that she was having a kundalini experience that was opening up more of her spiritual energy. But that was because she had the language of kundalini, and she knew the language of yogic philosophy. And that guided her into integrating the experience that she had and safely regaining the mothering role with her child. But it was so deeply disturbing, she and her husband Stan recognized the need to create a spiritual emergency network to support people who did not have the language and the know-how that she and Stan had and were looking for support so they could integrate their experiences. So this is one of the oldest tortoises on the planet. And let's just recognize that these spiritually transformative experiences have been going on throughout history, even though they haven't always been written about. Oh dear. This didn't show up when I was reviewing the slides, but anyway, it says spiritual emergence and spiritual emergency doubled. So in the way that I'm used to talking about spiritual emergence, it's truly a process. And we can say that it has plus or minus 12 categories of anomalous experiences, meaning experiences that take us out of ego, and that clearly include spiritually transformative experiences. But the difference between the spiritually transformative experience and spiritual emergence is spiritual emergence is a process. And it's a process that not only includes the kind of things, categories that I just mentioned in the last slide, but also other experiences like the dark night of the soul, where someone can experience a great longing for communion with God, or communion or deep connection with themselves and with others. And it can seem very much like depression, but it is actually has a very strong spiritual component. So if we recognize that let me just say, the other part of the spiritual emergence process is it usually includes psychosocial processing. So in other words, it's the spiritual emergence is not a linear process where one goes from being less awake to more awake. And so there's more and more light dawning, and it just feels better and better to be alive because you have more light in your life. But instead, it's more of a zigzag process, which also the Grofs first defined, in which someone may take a leap and have a very powerful spiritual emergence experience, but then something arises which may point to or take a person back to a disturbing experience they had earlier on in life that is looking to be processed and looking to be integrated and really let go of, so that a person can go into their next steps further into the light. So this spiritual emergence process is not a linear, as in point A to point B in a straight line, but a zigzag process, or sometimes two steps forward, one step back. And it has the potential to reach an end point, which we might call self-realization or increased authenticity. There are so many different words we have for it now. So our vocabulary is expanding, which is great. But people are unsure of exactly what that endpoint is and exactly what it looks like, because there are so many different ways that we're now languaging it from so many different cultures all the way around the world. But the experience that people have as they're reaching towards that endpoint is a much greater peace, much more compassion, expanded sense of wisdom, and usually a greater desire to be of service to others, a very compelling desire to be of service to others. So those are the elements of the spiritual emergence process. So if we look at it in this particular way, that it can take us further into the light and into more peace and compassion and connection to others, isn't it obvious that we need to support this in today's world? So I say that because as from my position, it needs to be included in the way that we teach psychology and psychiatry and medicine. It's an extremely important element of defining well-being. The other aspect that we might look at is, are we all now in a dark night of the soul? In other words, we're all being sequestered more from each other, 6 feet at least, or 2 meters of distance between us, wearing masks so that we can't exactly recognize what's happening with the other person because we've lost touch with their face. So for a lot of people, that's been extremely distressing to have this lack of connection. and they've gone into deeper depression. In fact, the statistics show that about 25% of Americans now would say that they're depressed. And there's a huge increase in suicide as well, which is terribly unfortunate. But on the other side of it, which I also attempt to track, there has been an increase in the numbers of people who have time now and to meditate, so they don't have to perhaps go to the office, spending half an hour one way and back, but they have been able to go more deeply into themselves and pick up some of the self-care exercises that we can do to expand our self-awareness and also expand our peace. So it's just an interesting reflection. Are we in fact in a spiritual emergency right now as a planet? And does that actually contain the possibility that we are moving into a higher state of evolution? Some people actually say that this, when a spiritual emergency happens for someone, it's an event that's related to evolution, our own personal evolution. And if it's supported, then we evolve to being able to function at a higher level in our lives. So to reflect a little bit more on the catalysts for a spiritual emergency, a lot of which you will recognize is going on right now in the world, there can be a tremendous fear of the unknown and a desire for security. And most of us are experiencing or have experienced quite a bit of social isolation. That can also be a catalyst. Loss of a job, loss of family, friend, or loss of health can also be a catalyst. Loss of touch. I was kayaking with a friend the other day who said that's been the hardest part of it for her, is just she's a very touchy person and she's not getting her 8 hugs a day. Also, the breakdown of the foundations of life here in the United States, with some of the fracturing that's going on around racism, as well as the competition for the next presidency, there's been a real breakdown of in terms of people not feeling like they have the foundations of their life that they had depended on. That includes the question coming up, what is truth and where is our moral anchor? Some people go deeper and will ask, why is God doing this to us? Why should we have a pandemic? And some people will take the point of view that they feel like they're being victims right now, that there couldn't be anything good that's coming out of it. Some people are going into a great deal of reactivity, and so we're seeing more aggression as well as more depression, more resistance and frustration. But as I mentioned, some people are seeking help from stimulants for greater awareness. And one way of looking at that is recognizing how many people are seeking out plant medicines such as ayahuasca or other ways of increasing awareness through other, we can call them medicines or psychedelics. So other stimulants for greater self-awareness might include meditation, yoga, energy work, body work, movement, and ecstatic dance. And unfortunately, we can also recognize that some people just need to close down as a result of the overwhelm. And I think of it as being overwhelmed in our hard drive in relationship to this, to the pandemic especially. So that will lead some people to more alcohol and less exercise, less connection, and more isolation. So what kind of signs would you see in your practice, if you're a yoga instructor or if you're a massage practitioner, body worker, energy worker? One of the things that you might notice if someone is moving into a very intense part of their spiritual emergence, or even a spiritual emergency in which they become deeply distressed to the point where they really can't function in their life, like in their work or in their home life, as in doing the chores or just maintaining the house or even maintaining themselves. In other words, not taking care of their personal hygiene, for instance. So one of the things that you might see if you're working with such a person is that they may have a tendency to have more of a stress release that might occur as emotion, or it might occur as tremors in the body, or a letting go of the body in ways that are even more than a tremor. So it might seem like quite spastic energetic release, or it could be a kind of release that actually looks very graceful, as in a person doing spontaneous mudras. So any kind of movement, though, that seems out of the ordinary, that may in fact be quite disruptive, could be a sign that recognizes that someone is going through a spiritual emergence process. Some people have a very strong desire when they feel that loss of control. They feel a strong desire to bolster their ego. And I've had people come to me who said, well, I felt like I was Christ. I felt like actually I'm a reincarnation of Christ. And that is my true identity. So some people will move into something that a trained psychotherapist might say, well, my gosh, you know, they're really moving into a state of being unreal and manic, and their ego is way, way out of shape. Other people will say, but I have a sense of connection to Christ. I just am not aware of my typical way of identifying with myself, but instead just feel like I want to give to all of humanity. What can I do now for all of humanity? I want to completely transform my life. So hopefully with those two extremes, you can recognize that there can be a great loss of identity or a sense of, who am I? Am I like this Christ figure, or am I actually someone who is in the midst of recognizing who they truly are? Or am I the person that my wife tells me I am, or my husband tells me I am, or am I the person that my kids tell me who I am? Who am I? And for some people, they start hopping around to all kinds of different belief systems. I'll call it New Age hopscotch, because they're not quite sure who they are anymore or exactly what they believe. And for some people, they move into a kind of spiritual bypassing. So that's a term that was created back in the 70s by a psychologist when he recognized that some people who identify with being extremely spiritual and needing a very spiritual way of life with lots of meditation and lots of yoga and lots of spiritual practices are actually wanting to bypass or get away from some of the psychological issues that they might have that are part of growing up. For instance, really learning how to live with people with compassion and love and a great deal of self-acceptance, as well as the ability to forgive oneself and forgive others. So spiritual bypassing is something that was first noticed in spiritual community. And I think it's very fortunate that's becoming more of a kitchen table conversation piece now. More people are using it and becoming aware of it. Because in the spiritual emergence process, we need to not only be moving towards whatever for us is the light, but also being willing to look at some of the psychological issues we might have that we need to integrate through the means that work for us in integration. Other signs that you might see that someone is in a spiritual emergence process is an increase of sensitivity, which might show up in a variety of ways. It could be more emotion, but it also could be higher intuition and perhaps a desire to fast for a long period of time, or to do some kind of a practice that will help them to break away from what their ordinary life has been like and move them into a more spiritual direction. What can be, of course, very troubling is if someone is unable to sleep, or they're not taking care of themselves in terms of eating well or exercising, or they're disconnecting from their support network, or they're excessively using drugs or alcohol, or sometimes getting into sugar in a big way. And then, of course, if someone feels less connected or less of a sense of belonging to any kind of stable community, that can be also a sign that they're in a process which is extremely intense and they don't have a sense of belonging to any particular organization or group. So having been through that particular list, you can recognize that spiritual emergency can sometimes be confused with symptoms of mental illness. Because when this kind of transition time is at its most intense, we can call it acute, a person can be extremely self-absorbed. And if maybe somebody would say, well, they seem to be so much in their own world, I don't know how to reach them, I can't connect with them, they don't tell me what's happening with them. Or they might, again, not be able to work or attend to their family duties. And then if they are reporting unusual experiences that seem out of touch with conventional reality, that for a conventionally trained healthcare provider is a sign this person is mentally ill. And also for people who aren't necessarily trained as healthcare providers, it can be a signal to them, if they don't understand what's happening with the person, that it's easier for that for them then to assess, well, they're out of touch with conventional reality, so they must be mentally ill. So those of us who are looking at the possibility of spiritual emergency do everything we can to be extremely discerning about what is really a spiritual crisis or spiritual emergency, and what might have some kind of a flavor of some psychological distress that needs help. But just because someone is going through the kind of experience we call a spiritual emergency does not mean that there's pathology. It is not a category of pathology. So unfortunately, the dominant paradigm, which basically functions in a way where people get medicated if they are in distress, that we can say with great probability that many people who have been in a spiritual crisis and have needed this appropriate support for spiritual crisis or spiritual emergency have been medicated and have been told that they are mentally ill. So I recently showed the film Medicating Normal for those people who wanted to see it within IMHU, because it's not yet available in movie houses. But it very much clarifies that where the conventional paradigm with biomedicine is going right now is oftentimes medicating what is a normal response. So if someone becomes especially emotional, let's say because of a loss, they might be medicated rather than supported to go through a grieving process in which they will then become resolved and feel at greater peace. So I highly recommend seeing that particular film. And it does, of course, relate to spiritual emergency, because if someone in a spiritual emergency would show up at a hospital, they might, in fact, be given medication and given a diagnosis, and then also be traumatized by the kind of environment one finds in an emergency room. For instance, a lot of noise, a lot of lights, and possibly very little connection with anyone around them who understands what they're going through. So again, I just wanted to underscore the fact that I am not against psychiatric medication, but an assessment is very important. And assessing a person in terms of what's going on with them in their own spiritual emergence process, as well as what's going on with them with stressors that may relate more distinctly to their psychology or and their emotional life. So what are the needs then of someone who's going through a spiritual emergency? Generally speaking, they have a disorientation. Like the cartoon here, the cat is posting that he's lost. And so there's a real sense of who am I, where am I, and where am I going? And generally speaking, what we need when that's going on is some time out to reevaluate our life and to get reoriented. And what can be extremely helpful is if someone that we trust will be there for us and listen to us and give us support in the sense of giving us a good ear to listen, but also giving positive expectation. In other words, someone is going through a process which is going to have an extremely positive end to it. So even though it may be very uncomfortable in process or for a period of time, it can have a wonderful end. And in fact, there can be great meaning that can be found within the experience. So giving a person even that simple cognitive framework that I just spoke out can be all that they need, as well as someone truly being with them in a non-judgmental way. So what are the results of spiritual emergency? If someone who is in a spiritual emergency does not have adequate support, they can have a sense of real fear about what's going on with them. In other words, I've pointed to the lack of control that some people feel and a sense of not knowing when that will end or whether they're going to continue to feel fearful for a long time. They can be very self-absorbed. And if they don't have adequate support, then they might isolate themselves and continue into a whole lifestyle of isolation. Within that life, they may become more emotionally reactive and impatient with others and have much less interest in caring for themselves, so their personal hygiene goes down. And they may, in fact, desire to have more psychiatric medication because that's the only way that they can understand what's going on with them. Some people will become more involved with their inner life and less discerning of what is part of conventional reality, and thus break themselves off from what is okay within the conventional reality, and possibly go into being a danger to themselves or others because they really let go of self-care. But if they have adequate support, they'll have an increase in their well-being. They'll be able to really address healing that they need within themselves and work through whatever it is that it has broken loose for them that needs integration, and this will lead to more peace. They'll have more ability to relate to others, more empathy and compassion for themselves as well as others, and as I mentioned, a great desire to be in service to others. People who get this kind of support usually have much less interest in any kind of psychiatric medication, and so therefore they're not going to be dependent on it. And they express a desire to live from their soul rather than their ego. So this also will take them into a kind of community that's oriented towards values of sustaining life and preserving nature, which of course, is wonderful for our whole planet to have more people oriented that way. And for some people, there's a very distinct increase in mental telepathy. Some people really start manifesting a gift in the healing, as well as working with energy. And some people seem to be greatly gifted with intuition, especially people who've been through a near-death experience. So I mentioned this idea of being with someone, and those two words together were really coined by in terms of utilizing it with people who were in emotional distress. It was really coined by a man by the name of Loren Mosher back in the 70s, and he was working with people who were having what was at that point called a first break psychosis, and was hiring paraprofessionals to be with them. And what they found was being with a person who was in that deep distress in a residential environment rather than a hospital environment actually led to greater healing and much less need to come back into the hospital and much less need for drugs. So this idea of just simply being with someone, which we oftentimes relate to holding space with someone in a non-judgmental way, is one of the best things that you can offer in terms of supporting someone in their spiritual emergence as well as a spiritual emergency. So we can call that peer support because it allows a fellowship that's egalitarian. It's not hierarchical. So it offers connection. It offers appropriate boundaries. So that would mean not becoming intimate with a person who is going through this process. Maybe appropriate touch, which is affirming, but not sexual. And then, as I mentioned, holding positive expectation that the person is actually going through a process that is going to help them expand their life in a sense of their own self-awareness, as well as their abilities to be with other people and be in service to the health of the planet. And another aspect of offering peer support can be, at times, offering a connection to community resources that might be helpful. When someone is out of a less acute phase of a spiritual emergency, it can be extremely helpful to introduce what I think of as a map of the journey. In other words, giving a person some orientation as to where they are, some orientation to language to think about where they are, and also some idea of what they may be reaching into when they resolve the emergency. So some kind of a stable philosophy that really they can relate to. Examples are the seven limbs of yoga or the work of Eckhart Tolle, which is not really relating to any particular religion. But to introduce some kind of a cognitive framework so a person understands what they're going through, and also encourage some kind of practice that will lead them to the goal that they want in terms of their own spiritual emergence process. So I'm looking at the time. I'm feeling quite rushed, but I do want to mention that Eckhart Tolle, one of his books, really goes deeply into the idea of the pain body. And especially for those of you who are working with people directly as energy workers and body workers, you may not use this particular term, the pain body, but recognize that all people have a tendency to maintain memory of emotions that were not felt during a disturbing experience. So I give you a URL for a YouTube that you can watch. It just lasts for 3 minutes, where he himself goes into this a little bit more deeply. But the emotions that were not experienced during the trauma or during an experience that was disturbing can be stored and can show up as physical pain or show up as illness. And of course, we want to be able to release those in order to reclaim our wholeness and our full health. One of the things that I've been particularly interested in, because I was trained as a bioenergetic therapist back in a long time ago, so this is 50 years ago, when release happens, when we're having a release from the pain body, we may in some ways call it a bioenergetic experience because it's releasing pain that was related to how we are holding the energy of emotion from the past. But some people, especially those people who are trained specifically as yoga instructors, will more easily call it a kundalini experience. And I think it's very difficult these days to come by a deeper understanding or the deepest understanding of what kundalini is about, because fortunately it's coming into our language, but unfortunately there are many different ways people are understanding it. So my sense is that kundalini awakening can be extremely gentle. It doesn't have to be one that is difficult for people. And that if one goes into a deeper practice of meditation, it can actually be an extremely gentle process all the way through. So that's a possibility. And we shouldn't assume that just because someone is having a strong energetic experience that it's a kundalini awakening. But certainly releasing the pain body is extremely important. And when a person notices that their client is suffering from some aspect of the pain body, of course, movement, yoga, toning, which is a kind of spontaneous use of the voice, dance, body work, can all be extremely useful, as well as listening to our daydreams and nightdreams. So we do get by with a little help with our friends, and I hope that you have more of an understanding of what this idea of being with is about. I try to always encourage people to take care of themselves, especially if they're in a role which has to do with helping people who are in spiritual emergency or in a very intense phase of their spiritual emergence. Here are some resources. The Spiritual Crisis Network in the UK is available, but oftentimes only can offer support by emails, not by voice. Similarly, the Spiritual Emergence Network is only available by email for the most part. There are books by Stan and Christina Graf, as well as by myself. And in the UK, Russell Razaki is a medical doctor, psychiatrist, who works within NHS. And he wrote a book called Breaking Down is Waking Up, which is very consistent with our ideas about spiritual emergency. Also, Catherine Lucas has written a couple of books, and she's a specialist with mindfulness. So I have trained 80 spiritual emergence coaches, and they are in many countries around the world and can be accessed through the URL here, which is imhu.org coaching directory. I also, as I mentioned, train the spiritual emergence coaches, and you can look for more information at the URL I provide. And there are, as John mentioned, 34 different courses at IMHU. One is specifically on kundalini and bioenergy, if that's something that you would like more information about. So most of our courses relate to spiritual emergence, but go into more detail on certain aspects of the spiritual emergence process. Now, I'm not going to read through this whole list, but I wanted to just include a slide of resources that you can do helping people who are in a stress because of the pandemic and because of the dark night of the soul, which can really take over someone who is struggling with loss or struggling with a disconnect that has come upon us with the pandemic. This is the last slide, and it has my contact information on it. Please feel free to connect personally with me. My contact info is eb@imhu.org. I do offer personal consultation. The phone number is there in Vermont. And I Yes, that was the last slide. So I'm going to come back to you now. Let me see. How do I get out of this? Okay. Breathless. I still haven't learned to cut my slides down any more than that, but I think we still have 10 more minutes.
Great.
If there are any questions.
Thank you, Emma. Yeah. So if anybody's got any questions, please do put them in the chat box, and Emma will answer them. So while we're waiting, Emma, you mentioned about ayahuasca.
Yes.
A couple of times there. And I've had a couple of clients who have been, there is a bit of a craze for it, isn't there? And a couple of people who hadn't really had any experience of, I would say it, a spiritual opening, because obviously when you take, I haven't taken ayahuasca, but from what I gather, it's very, very powerful and opens you up to all kinds of stuff which you won't have experienced before. But anyway, in these two cases, they had quite for example, in one case, I think someone did a 10-day retreat where they were doing ayahuasca pretty much every day, you know, and they'd never done anything like it before. But the results were that they couldn't really function afterwards. And I found that quite challenging to work with these people, because they were unable to work and the family relationships started to break down and things like that. I'm just wondering if you could offer any advice about those kind of situations where people have really kind of lost it and can't kind of come back to themselves almost.
Yeah, well, I've also been in situations where people who have had a similar experience have reached out to me, and they oftentimes have recognized that they did not get the kind of support that was promised to them or that they expected to get while they were going through this very intense experience. And oftentimes they're in a foreign culture, they don't speak the language. The person, the shaman or the leader, it does not live in the same area they live in. So they go away to have the experience and then come back into their culture and try to reorient and it's very difficult to bring those two together, the two cultures together. So John, in my situation, I offer personal consultation, but I also do my best to put that person together with someone who has had a similar experience. In other words, they're very familiar with ayahuasca and they have been through integration processes and they can, in fact, be like a peer support person. So they can deeply recognize where the other person, you know, where the person who's experienced this has, where they're coming from, really, and help them get more grounding. Mm. And so it's not just grounding that's going to do it, because I think a person really is working through, well, who am I after all this? Because the whole world has opened up to them in a way that they have become disoriented in terms of how they constructed the life they had in their more ordinary life. And how is it that they're supposed to integrate this extraordinary recognition or realization back into their ordinary life? So, I mean, ideally, that person can take time out and be with peers who've had the experience and have been able to successfully integrate it. Mm. And not that they say, okay, here's the recipe, A, B, C, D, and then you put it in the oven and bake for 45 minutes. That doesn't work because it's unique for each person. But that they basically can hold that positive expectation and recognize that a person does need time out. I don't think it can be pushed, that integration.
Yeah.
And when people try to push it, sometimes they try to push it down, as in repress it, or just say, well, that was a big roller coaster ride that I just took. Glad to be back. or they push it away, you know, through drinking or something, some kind of habit that dulls their memory.
Yeah.
Or they look to some psychiatric medication to go, okay, I just got to get out of this.
Yeah.
Because my family's so upset with me. I just got to get out of this. So they go towards medication. But ideally, a person can have that kind of integration as part of the intensive. And unfortunately, the way ayahuasca is coming into our culture, I don't think people see that the integration is as important, even more important than the experience itself.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. There's a couple of questions here then. So from Therese, is there a particular age when the spiritual emergence manifests normally?
Wow, that's an interesting question. Well, in the shamanic cultures, they would recognize that some children are born with certain kinds of intuitive gifts and that they see more than other children see and are actually, in some ways, you know, carrying the blueprint of being a shaman. And they will possibly disturb their parents or their extended family by being able to, let's say, be a medical intuitive, be able to see into people in ways that are highly unusual. But if it is in a shamanic culture, ideally the child is put with a shaman who will be then a trainer for them for life. So a spiritual emergence process can be very intense with young children. It can, and that can continue, of course, into adolescence. Sometimes a person starts discovering certain psychic abilities they have, or they take ayahuasca or some other kind of, I mean, even marijuana for some people can open them up in ways that are very difficult to handle if they have very potent marijuana. And that can happen in adolescence. But the spiritual emergency process can also happen at any age. And I think some people entering into their elder years where they're really confronting death, sometimes that, you know, the crisis is of a different color at that point, but it takes them into a kind of existential crisis of what has my life been about? And is there a God? And where am I going to go after death? And those questions can take them into a deep disturbance and into a profound transformation. So I would say that at any time in life, a spiritual emergence process can begin in earnest or with a great amount of depth, and a spiritual emergency can happen at any time in life as well.
Great, thank you. And Karen is asking, about your phone number again and the slide. I think, Karen, the slides are as a handout, aren't they, Emma? You sent
them. I can put it in the chat box.
Okay, that'd be great. So your phone number and your contact details, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then Joe is asking, saying he has a friend whose pain body is overwhelming. She has a history of trauma, 3 events, and long-term endometriosis and fatigue. And I'm wondering if there's someone who might be able to help her navigate her way to better health.
Well,
I know that Joe's a therapist himself. So,
you know, if Joe is in the UK, you might be able to answer that question better than I.
Yes, sure.
I think, you know, ideally, I will just say this, ideally, you can work with a therapist where you can have a relationship that is built on trust and will encourage some letting go. And that can be more difficult to do on a Zoom call.
Sure. Emma, I'm just wondering, could you talk about what you'll be covering in the next 2 Mondays?
Sure. Did you want to say anything more, though, in answer to that question first?
No, I can get back to Joe about that.
Sure. Oh, okay. All right. So in the next one, I've got to read my notes here. there's, oh, okay, of course, there's going to be a lot more focus on what a person can do to help someone in spiritual emergency. And some of that will involve really looking at teamwork. So I've mentioned a couple times today that teamwork is important. But I'll go into that in greater depth. And also just, you know, some people have been trained, let's say if they're yoga instructors, to do certain kinds of breathing with people. And I'll go more into some of the breath, kind of breath work that can be very helpful in terms of grounding. And really illuminating more about the best role a person can take, especially if they are a body worker, energy worker, yoga instructor. And in the third one, which is on September 21st, I'll be speaking much more about what I learned from Brazilian spiritists and what they have to offer us in terms of their ability to work with people in spiritual emergence and emergency. So first of all, they use medical intuitives to recognize who basically has gifts that need training and are able to really discern the difference very much more quickly, I think, than those of us in the UK and USA in terms of when does a person need to be in therapy or working with a body worker to assist with releasing the pain body, and when does someone need the spiritual help, and how can the team really further the integration so that a person can move as effectively and quickly as possible in their spiritual emergence. So the spiritists have a great deal to teach us in that, and I'll be going into that in the third session.
Thank you. Just one last thing before we stop. It's my interest, really, is about, you know, you're talking about bioenergetic releases and the relationship between that and Kundalini and how that can be mistaken. And there's a couple of things that you, well, we've had a webinar on TRE work, for example, where people sort of almost consciously go into a kind of shaking in order to release held charge, you could say, from the sympathetic nervous system, a bit like animals do. You know, you can see them do that.
Yes.
Which is a kind of really clear release, you could say. And then other situations which I know quite a few therapists have seen, and certainly I've seen it myself, it can happen in Bowen work, craniosacral work, and other kinds of modalities, where people go into particular movements, I think you've described them, which appear to be releases, but they just go on and on and on. And each time they come for a session, it's the same kind of thing. They go into a certain kind of pattern of movement, which doesn't seem to kind of resolve. And sometimes those movements, I've seen them, can be really, really quite extreme. Sometimes they can be a kind of more gentle kind of tremor, as you describe, but sometimes they can be really quite, almost not exactly violent, but very marked. And certainly I've had a number of clients over the years where that just seems to happen, and it doesn't seem to resolve, and it doesn't seem to do anything. And I'm just wondering if you've come across that, or you have ways of working with that. I mean, what one way in craniosacral work is to sometimes people like to slow movements down or something like that, but even that doesn't always work.
You know, your question reminds me of work that I did with Arnold Mindell. He was trained as a physicist and then got into process-oriented work, which embroiders on Jung as well as quantum physics. And so there was a point at which I was learning a lot from him. And what I noticed he would do in cases like this, which I do as well as best I can, is to assist a person to move into it further. Like whatever the movement is, to just put all attention on it and follow it where it wants to go. Mm. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
So, my experience of that personally is it becomes a bit dreamlike, mm-hmm. because it, in a way it's an extraordinary, physical manifestation that doesn't really fit into normal life. Like, what is this? Is this a mudra? Is this a, what is this? You know? And then to the idea of following it, the only way I could do it is to kind of put myself into a dream and say, okay, I'm going to just surrender into that, but also just take it where it wants to go. And I saw a lot, I've seen a lot of people resolve whatever it is by doing that. And it's very hard to put any kind of language on it. It really has to do with following the body and the impulse and the wisdom within the body.
Cool.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. All right. So Josephine Sellers just saying she'd like to interview in relation to the psychotherapeutic community. I know there is a considerable resistance or lack of knowledge or personal experience of such matters, leaving clients often unsupported.
Okay. Josephine, please feel free to contact me and we can talk further about that.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you, everybody. And we will see you next Monday. On tomorrow we have a webinar with Joe Averson, who is going to be talking about sacred geometry, I think. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you,
Emma.
It was really enjoyable.
Thank you.
Bye, Julian.
Bye. Bye. Bye.